F2. Number 20B.
Where we say, I have a problem, and now God is here to help me. You know, as I say so, you see quite nicely that what the human mind then does is to make God our servant. Now, is God the servant of men or not? He certainly isn't. But if we keep that attitude, you see, that God is here to help us in our problems, then we make God our servant. And we degrade God to our servant. And that's what we usually do. That's where really, as you will see, where the point comes in which explains us why Christian Science hasn't made the grade, hasn't grown. Because it missed the fourth side of the Holy City. It has become a religion where God is made the servant of man. And if God doesn't serve properly man, then one begins to doubt if he really is a God or not, and if he's any good or not. So Paul comes in and says, well, you must be careful that you also take in within your consciousness the fourth side of the Holy City, that fourth side where you see the idea always in its principle. Therefore, where you give everything back into its principle. And therefore, our only problem which we have is how to put the idea back into principle. How we can serve God. How we are the servants of God. See, now you change that relationship. And therefore, Jesus is always called, you see, the servant of God. That he was ministering God, that we have to minister God. It means that everything within us really should be of that nature which says, how can I glorify God? Not how can God help me? How can God help me to glorify me as a human being? But the other way around. It's the other way around of how can we serve God? Of how can we be a minister unto God? It's always a sense that what we have, that the aim of demonstration is not demonstrating the fulfillment of a human wish, not demonstrating the fulfillment of a human desire or of a human plan, not that which we humanly feel is right, but the demonstration which now comes after the third side is how can we demonstrate a principle? How can we demonstrate the science of God? How can we live so as to glorify the idea of God? That is his big concern in the next three epistles. So you see, it's an enormous change that is taking place, and it shows that until we realize this fourth side of the Holy City, that we misuse science. That we misuse science. We use God for something which is human instead of something which is divine. This is what Paul has in mind when he was writing first the pastoral epistles. The pastoral epistles comprise of three epistles, first and second Timothy and Titus. You see at once something which explains you that fourth side of the Holy City. Namely, he is writing now to two of his students, two of those who should replace him in Cyprus and in Ephesus, two disciples that should stand as an example for the doctrine. He's no more writing to the churches. What these three epistles of combining in one as the pastoral epistles, we take the pastoral epistle as one standpoint, really, as one standpoint, signs of the word. What he shows is that really we should keep the doctrine pure, that is our aim of demonstration, that the aim of demonstration is not to use God for our purposes, for our wishes, for our plans, but that the aim, science, the foresight defines us the aim of God, that the aim of God is that man is embodying the signs of man, that man should live for the glorification of the signs of man and not for something else, not for his own advantage, not for his own sake, but for the sake of the signs of God. This is really the crucial point, and you will see that he shows that if we don't see this point, and therefore if we don't live up to this point, that Christianity goes lost. He writes to these representatives of his who are leaders of the church, and says, if you can't demonstrate the purity of the doctrine, then the church will disintegrate. And that will be the same thing with us today. We touch this new science, this new aspect of science, and if we are not careful, and if our life is not so that every step which we do and every activity which we do is not always under the consideration, does it bless the idea? Does it help the idea? Does it protect the idea? If that is not prevalent in consciousness, this idea will not grow. It will fall to pieces again. There is no question whatever about it. And the last 20 years prove it, that everywhere where those Timothys and Titus put always the idea of science in the first place, where they always looked that all their wishes, what is person about everyone is put aside, and where only the purity of the idea, the dignity of the idea, the wholeness of the idea is put first, then it could grow. There it could grow. But the moment that is lost out of sight, where the thought comes in, what can we do with this science, and what can everyone get out of this science, and how can everyone become a bigger shot than the other in this science, you will see that within a few years it will completely disintegrate and go lost. Thank God. Let only that be established which is God-like. So these epistles which we are considering here are very, very important aspects of this science, because they are those practical means, or show the practicality for establishing where we work the idea of science. So I think we could summarize those pastoral epistles by saying that what Paul wanted to teach was to, so to say, the doctrine, the theory, the doctrine, how to keep the doctrine pure. You see, that is more or less the main point in it. Says, now I must give you also means, the scientific means, how you can keep this idea pure. Because afterwards he shows that only as we can keep the science of man pure, that it can fulfill its purpose, namely to establish scientific Christianity. So, he addresses his two representatives, Timothy and Titus, quite different than he had ever addressed in all his letters his friends. You know how in his letters he would always somehow salute his friends in Rome or in Corinth and so on, say salute this and salute that, and would show them how they were working well and so on. But when he speaks now in that fourth side of the holy city, he says that they are his own son in the faith. If you take faith as his expression for scientific understanding, you see, you could see that he regarded now these two church leaders as his sons of science. He could, today we may say, my own son in science, he said, in the faith. He speaks to them and addresses them, so to say, as the men of science. See, that fourth side is our relationship to the science of man. He calls Titus his own son after the common faith. Can you see in these titles how he begins to change, to put another stress, another weight on man, namely man as the representative of science, of the science of man. That's what he has to represent. So, in these three Gospels, really, he would try to teach that doctrine which can keep the doctrine pure, so that by accepting our faith in the pure doctrine of Christianity, we can really serve to establish Christianity. Says, in no other way can we establish scientific Christianity but by being the man of science. But by being the man of science. Well, that is, you can see something very different from what we had before. Before we were just considering how God is graceful and just gives to man everything that man needs, how man can be one with the true idea of man. But then he says, now comes the danger. Now comes the danger. Now, in order to avoid that man tries to use the word of the Christ and Christianity for his own sake, for his own plans, I must give him the foresight and show him that what he has to demonstrate really and for what he has to use this word of this Christ and Christianity is to be a representative of the science of man and nothing else. This is really the message which he gives. So let's take the first letter to Timothy. And in his first letter to Timothy, he first writes to him how he must keep the doctrine clean how he must, can you say, clean, pure, you see, how to keep the doctrine of Christianity pure, and warns him against that which could endanger the purity of this science. You see at once this tone when you read these epistles, not only that he calls him, as I said, my own son in faith, in science, just put science instead of faith, you see, to get it clear, but he calls him to be watchful, to represent and be faithful to the sound doctrine, to the sound doctrine, and asked him to teach no other doctrine. That's something which we didn't have in the other epistle. This call, keep the doctrine pure, teach only the doctrine, see that you are representative of the doctrine. So he asked him to be really that, what is quite natural as the outcome of the third side of the city, that if man is the perfect idea of the divine principle, therefore he should work in that realm where man hallows and glorifies the divine principle and not something else. He exhorts Timothy to exercise thyself rather unto godliness, to exercise thyself rather unto scientificality, rather unto godliness. That, he says, that's your exercise. Don't try to exercise to fulfill all your needs you can think of. Having always more needs. Every year you go on having more needs, and trying to use God to meet those needs. He says, as you go on, try to see that our only need is to embody science. It's interesting in the chapter on prayer, where Mrs. Eddy says that this prayer of soul covers all human needs. But she doesn't in that whole chapter on prayer say what the human needs are. Except one, she says, what we most need is growth in grace. She doesn't say what the human needs are. Whenever that chapter on prayer is a marvel when one begins to analyze it, it just tells a lot what is in these pastoral epistles, just showing that all we need really, really, really is growth in grace. That's our need. Whereas when one reads the chapter on prayer with closed eyes, one reads the printed letter that covers all needs, and then we just say, all right, whatever needs I have, that will be covered, and builds up all sorts of human needs, and forgets that what Mrs. Eddy says in the whole chapter, that really all what we need is to grow in grace. What that chapter says is all what we really need is to be one with God. That's our need. She says in the prose work, I can't state it exactly, she speaks of that one great need and then calls it divine science. See how the foresight of the city is so important, because if that foresight doesn't come in, it leaves the Christian to believe that God is here to serve us and to serve us just as a servant does, the master. And we are the master. And we are going to tell what need we have. So he says, exercise thyself rather unto godliness, unto scientific understanding. Because, he says, because godliness is profitable unto all things. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and all his righteousness, and leave it to that to do with us what that righteousness is going to do with us. He asked him to teach the doctrine which is according to godliness. Can you hear how everything centers around that one is the faith, as a son of faith, that all what is necessary is to have a sound doctrine, to teach the sound doctrine, to exercise ourselves unto the sound doctrine, and to exercise ourselves unto godliness. You see how everything goes back to the principle of being. That's what we have to demonstrate. That's our biggest demonstration. That everything goes back to the principle of being. And not that everything remains in the human and is there to serve us. So his bugle call really is, keep thyself pure. Always is, keep the doctrine pure. He says, keep thyself pure. Keep this commandment without spot, unrebukable. You see, we had this unrebukable and this spotlessness very often in the third triad, in the Christianity triad, showing that man is spotless. But here now he is not interested that man is spotless, but that he keeps the doctrine spotless. Can you hear the difference? You see? Because he sees that if he goes not further than the third side, I never get the right term, and I want to say if you stop at the third, or if you halt at the third, is that the right? If you and don't go further to the fourth side, we are not coinciding with the whole fourth side of the Holy City. We just have to see that always we are keeping the wholeness and oneness in our consciousness intact, and don't what they tried to do really after the resurrection of Jesus to put the garment of Jesus into four parts. They wanted, how was that saying, that they were trying to... Yes, they drew then lots, but first they wanted to cut it into pieces, divide it. You see, divide it. And they not even could do that. They were even forced to cast lots so that it stayed whole, intact, you see. That's what we must see, that we are not those soldiers, those Roman soldiers, which say, well, here is the garment, that's something worthwhile. Now, let's have something of it. No, let's have the whole of it. Let's have the whole of it. So he says, keep this commandment without spot, unrebukable. Keep that which is committed to thy trust. That was committed to him was the doctrine, actually. Avoid profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so called. See, he really, I think that's one of the very few references where the word science is printed in the Bible. So he says, well, keep your science, your doctrine pure, and see that it is not torn apart by opposite sciences. See, as Mrs. Eddy said, the education of the future will be in spiritual science against the so-called counterfeit sciences. Somewhere in miscellaneous writings, round about 61 or so. That's what he told them already here. Keep the spiritual science intact against the so-called counterfeit sciences. It shows him that only through this attitude he can achieve something, that only through this attitude he can really propagate scientific Christianity. He says, Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, and that all men, that so that all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of the truth. See, he sees that what we have to demonstrate is that all men come unto the knowledge of the truth, that they come to the fourth side. He doesn't leave it at the third side. He doesn't leave it there that Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. That's the third side, you see. Do I make myself clear? It's the Christianity sense where God comes to men and then the Christianity helps and saves men. But what really is the aim of it? And we have somehow to go through that barrier and push through and say, but what the aim is to establish the knowledge of truth in the world. So we shouldn't be surprised, really, that some of our so-called demonstrations, which are demonstrations in Christianity, healings and so on, solving business problems and so on, they are demonstrations, say, in Christianity, but that's not the end. If we only do that, we will never win the world. We'll never win the world and give it scientific Christianity, because others will do the same. It's not so that medical science doesn't heal anything. They jolly well heal, and they heal pretty good. They feel pretty good. And all sorts of faith to heal pretty good. Only that we don't know so much about it because we only put our nose into the textbook and into science. But there are many, many other beliefs in the world that do pretty good work in the third side. But it doesn't do anything. See, naturally you have over here that psychosomatic medicine and so on. Well, I just remember one or the other of the professors of psychosomatic medicine, the one who is at the head of a big university clinic. Well, he says, all what we do is to prevent people from dying. But what we do, we make them lifelong invalids. See, he says, well, what we do, that we can't deny. We prevent people from dying because the average age of men, the life expectancy of men goes up and up and up and up. And we can prevent quite a lot of people from dying, but we can't heal them. That we can't heal them. All what we do is to repair something the worst and just make them a lifelong cripple. Or we make them something which is healed and the next morning he has another disease. And the next year he comes back with another disease. And we heal him again, and the next one he comes back. He says, that's not healing. That's making just people a lifelong cripple. Well, there are many beliefs to do that. But what we must see is this, that we push through that barrier, that belief barrier, so as to establish science in consciousness. If we can establish science in consciousness, then we have won the battle. This professor, he says, there is just no answer today to it. And he tried out all sorts of mental healings with his patients in his clinic. All sorts, from hypnotism, from magnetism, from everything. And he says, oh, I get better results through them. But he says, I can also do the same thing just by telling people that they are treated by a hypnotist or by a magnetizer or what you call him. Also, and it's true and it's a lie what I tell them, but they get just as well healed as if I tell the hypnotist too it should work. It's just the belief of the patient. So let's see if we push through to establishing men science. That's the health.